This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
Well, this week, Stratford University launched their new web page.
Mm-hmm.
We transferred the whole back end to open source software, Drupal.
Really?
And I'm actually a big believer in open source.
I know
you are. Open source. So this was a big switch over. We went from a proprietary back end site core, and now we're completely switched over to open source. It was a big switch over, and so we're quite happy with the new website. And but it was always a big project to do. We had developers working on that in the back rooms at Stratford mm-hmm. University, just having lots and lots of fun. I've been off at offsites at Stratford for 5 days of offsites. We had our major offsite, all of our leadership team out at Harrington on the Bay for 3 days. Then we had all of our IT and accounting folks together for another offsite trying to do some programming. What we discovered, we go to these offsites, it's like a management technique. We got real problems to work on, and so we have these what we call FedEx projects. You work on a particular project, and you have to deliver it in 24 hours, positively, overnight.
Wow.
And so we vote on the project at noon the first day, and at noon the second day, the teams deliver. And it's turned out to be really an effective way to solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
When a team of people focus on something at dinner, at breakfast, they can work as late as they want
mm-hmm.
and have a little fun doing it. So we try to do that at least once a year. And we tried another thing that was kind of fun. This was because people want to get out of their mindset. So we tried this game that's called the Imagination Kit, where we took our senior managers and we gave them like a kit, like a balloons. They had duct tape. They had yardsticks. They had clothespins. They had rope. They had a newspaper. They had all sorts of just regular items. And then they had to create a game. They had 30 minutes to create a game.
Mm-hmm.
And it forces you to think outside of the box and try to use things in an unusual way. And so this is sort of to break the bounds of creativity. We actually are practicing this at Stratford because, we also try to teach this to our students. One of the problems when you brainstorm is that people think there are constraints. And they have these unwritten, unrealized mental barriers, and they can't imagine solutions outside of that mental barrier. And so the question is, how can you break through those mental barriers and come up with something that's beyond your imagination? And there's a process you have to go through. So, one team had they took 2 yardsticks and the rope and clothespins, and they created a crossbow. They took the clothespins apart, and they made little arrows, and they used the crossbow and arrows to pop balloons. Well, who would have thought
right.
yardstick, rope, and clothespins and balloons could make a game?
Mm-hmm.
That's the beauty of this sort of thinking.
Think about all of the things that we take for granted today that never would have come to existence if that sort of thinking didn't exist, like electricity or any number of things, right?
That's right. And so So this is becoming more and more kind of our focus. How can we get our students? So we start with the staff. How can we get our students to think creatively? We've been teaching critical thinking for a while, but critical thinking is sort of deductive, where you have a set thing and you try to reach a conclusion, but it doesn't necessarily force you to think outside of your imagination boundaries. You get a conclusion within your preconceived constraints. So the creative process is a little bit different, and then once you expand your boundaries, then you can go back to deductive reasoning and end up with something. So we're trying to explore and how to teach both critical thinking as well as creativity to give our students a skill set that's going to last a lifetime.
And in Profiles in IT, we'll talk about the guy who invented email, Raymond Samuel Tomlinson.
And, of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Oh, yeah. Huge. And, of course, Mr. Big Voice.
He's nowhere to be seen.
Is still not trying to help me carry. You know, he could think out of the box and decide, you know, maybe I'd get a better review at the end of the year if I'd help.
Well,
if I'd help Doc lift that mailbag up.
In order to think out of the box, he'd have to first think.
Oh, that is actually a major point. We got an email from Benoit in New Jersey.
Ooh.
Benoit is one of our regular listeners. Yeah, international. It's a French name. Dear Doc and Jim, I have an iPhone 4S, and Verizon is my carrier. I love my iPhone 4S, but it has this annoying problem regarding the data stream whenever I'm on the phone. It's particularly frustrating whenever I drive. I love this application called Waze. It's a fantastic GPS app that I learned about on Tech Talk. It's a navigation app.
Yeah, I know all about
it. And it's all about, you know, but it uses data to communicate with the network. And he said, if somebody calls me, I don't get data updates to Waze while I'm on the phone because my Verizon phone won't give me both voice and data at the same time.
Ah.
Is there something that I could do about this? Because this is really annoying on a long trip because then I don't get dynamic reroutes in the case of a wreck. Well, Benoit, I've got good news and I've got bad news.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the bad news is this feature is not available on your phone. It's also not available on iPhone 5s.
Yep.
Or iPhone 5s's.
Yep.
The good news is that if you get an upgrade to the iPhone 6, or 6 Plus, you can have this feature. This is actually big news. And this I just learned about this. See, Verizon has officially launched what they call Voice over LTE, which is the latest network that they have. Voice over LTE. And if you have Voice over LTE, you can talk and you can get data at the same time.
Hmm.
But it's only activated for the 6 and 6 Plus. The 5 and 5S don't support it, and any of the older ones don't support it. I'll tell you, I need this one, too. This is going to be one reason for me to upgrade to iPhone 6 because
Right. You still have a 5.
I've got a 5S, and it's a problem. If I'm on the phone and going with Waze, I don't get updates, so then I've got to be very careful. So the other thing that's interesting is if somebody tries to use Find My Phone, and you're on the phone, they can't find you because there's no data.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to hang up the phone before Find My Phone will work. And so, but if you've got this in place, you can actually track somebody with Find My Phone while they're on the phone. Now, they also have something called, that's rolled out at the same time, Advanced Calling 1.0. And this runs audio on frequencies that are more matched to the human voice and doubles the audio samples to the of a normal call to better reflect the nuances of the voice. So you get much better voice quality with this Advanced Calling 1.0. Now, this kind of advanced calling feature, they've had it on Viber and Skype for a long time. So finally, Verizon's going to roll that out so you get the same kind of voice quality as you would there. So that's really good. That's yet another reason to upgrade to the iPhone 6 or iPhone 6 Plus. We got an email from Tina in Ohio. Dear Tech Talk, sometimes when I take pictures, part of the scene is very, very bright and the rest is dark. This is particularly true if I'm taking a picture of somebody in front of a window.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a simple way to fix this problem with my iPhone 5S camera? I hate it when I take bad party pictures. Oh, this is Ohio.
Oh, right. There you go.
I hate it when I take bad party pictures.
Tina is new to the game here.
Tina's new to the game. Another one of those Ohio partiers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they must all listen to the podcast together. I hate the party pictures. I hate bad party pictures. But I love the show, Tina in Ohio. Well, Tina, the first thing I would do is I wouldn't shoot against the window.
Well, yeah.
But it may be that the way the party room's set up, that's all. That's the only way that she can take the pictures.
I have gotten the impression from previous emails that the party room is underground and there are no windows.
No, that may be another problem.
But this might be another party, too.
It could be another party. Maybe the party has moved upstairs, and that's the sliding glass doors. And I have no idea. I got no idea what's going on in Ohio.
The party downstairs has gotten too big to be just downstairs anymore.
So I have no idea what's going on with those Ohio parties. Okay, here's the good news, Tina. Your iPhone 5 has something called High Dynamic Range, HDR. Now, when you open up your camera, you'll see this HDR at the top of the screen. There's an HDR. You see the letters HDR at the top. Click on that, and you have a choice to either have it go on automatically, turn it on, or turn it off. You can have three choices there. Now, I usually leave mine in auto. Now, by the way, if you have HDR, if you turn on your flash, HDR won't work. It only works when the flash is off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is how HDR does. When you do it with the iPhone, it takes three pictures, and it what they call brackets the exposure. So it exposes it for, say, the bright part. Then it exposes it for the dark part of the image, and then it exposes it somewhere in between. So you get three pictures. So maybe the what's out at the window looks good in one, but the person is very dark. Then the person's face looks good, and then the background is washed out. And then it takes those three pictures, and it merges them into one, and mm-hmm. that's a high dynamic range picture. Now, clearly, since you're taking three pictures that are going to be superimposed, you can't move the camera. So you got to hold
the people.
The people can't move, and you got to hold the camera very still, so you have to be careful. And you'll notice when you're in HDR mode, there's kind of a delay. The little button sort of has a little graphic on it.
It spins around.
It spins around while it's doing all this stuff. So this is actually a great, great feature. Now, the HDR capacity, though, that's built into the iPhone is okay. It's not great, but it's better than what you have without it. Now, what I like is the Pro HDRX because
you're a pro.
Because, Tina, I am a pro.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So you can get the Pro HDRX. It costs $1.99 to download. You just get it at the App Store. Download it. And it takes really great high dynamic range photography. And it's got various shooting and editing options. It's easy to use. And I'll tell you, if you take pictures outdoors, I mean, you can get some striking effects if you like trees with clouds in the back. It's a great way to bring out the cloud features. See, now, in the old days, people just used filters for this. You know, you'd filter so the clouds would stand
right
out. But now with this HDR, you've got this other option. So there you go. Tina, if you really want to get top-notch party pictures, download the Pro HDRX for $1.99.
You know, the other thing, and I hope that maybe our Ohio people will experiment with this and send us some pictures, the panoramic shot on your iPhone.
Yeah, the panoramic.
That's a lot of fun to work with.
I love that panoramic shot. So what I'll do with the panoramic shot, you sort of put it on panoramic and you sort of rotate around kind of 360. And then sometimes it's the field of view is wider than you want. You pick up some tree or something you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
So then I just bring up, edit it, and I crop it down
yes
to the size that I want.
Exactly.
So that turns out to be a very nice feature. I use panoramic stuff a lot. Now, they're hard to print, but
they're hard to print, and again, you have the same issue with the people. If you're taking pictures of things that move, they
yeah
can't move, because otherwise it gets all distorted and crazy.
That's right. That is right. We got an email from Feroz in Fredericksburg, another regular listener. Dear Doc, I've heard you talk a lot about your drone. Well, thank you, Feroz. Yeah, I do talk a lot about that drone. Now, I'm thinking of buying a drone to take photographs while on vacation. Now, what are the legal limitations here? How much do they cost? It sounds like fun, but I don't want to get arrested.
It's all fun and games until somebody gets locked up.
I don't want to get arrested. Love the show. Feroz in Fredericksburg. Well, individuals can fly drones as a hobby or recreation. It's very much encouraged. I went to the FAA website. They said, well, we really encourage you to do this. Now, the thing is, the FAA has not written their final regulations yet. So these are their suggestions, but they're not actually written in as law. They suggest you fly below 400 feet, stay clear of surrounding obstacles, keep Keep your drone within visual sight line at all times. Remain well clear and do not interfere with manned aircraft operations. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Uh-huh. Don't fly within 5 miles of an airport unless you contact the airport and the control tower. Don't fly near people or stadiums. Don't fly an aircraft that weighs more than 55 pounds. And don't be careless or reckless. Well, these are all the regulations,
right.
Guidelines. Now, the final regulations are still being developed. Now, federal parks have started banning drones. Like there was somebody crashed their drone into the guys or Old Faithful at the
matter of time.
Yeah, and so they banned drones in national parks because they said it's just so disruptive. So they've also, as you may have noticed, people flying drones around the White House tend to get arrested. So the entire D.C. area is like a no-fly zone.
Mm-hmm.
So just be mindful of that. Now, the reason they've got this 400-foot upper limit is, you see, aircraft never get below 1,000 feet typically. But the region from 500 feet to 1,000 is sort of reserved for helicopters.
Right.
So that's helicopter space.
Mm-hmm.
So they want you to stay 100 feet below helicopter space.
A little cushion.
That's right. Now, you might also note there's also, if you really want to become an expert in this thing, they have the D.C. Area Drone Users Group. D.C. Area Drone, they call it the D.C. DUG, Drone Users Group. The D.C. DUG, that's an organization for amateur professional drone users. I went to their website.
Mm-hmm.
They got a couple of thousand members. They meet at least twice a month. Like today, they're going to meet at 1 o'clock. On May 16th.
On the mall, probably. So, never mind.
No, it's out in Virginia somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know they're pretty much never going to meet on the mall, Jim, unless there's going to be a mass arrest.
Mass arrest.
That's right. Now, Frost, I own the DJI Phantom 2 Vision drone. The DJI Phantom. I love that
drone. The Cadillac of drones.
I love that drone. I paid $1,200. It's got GPS. It's got a magnetometer. It's got an altimeter. It actually flies itself. I just set the GPS location and the altitude and just let it sit there, and it'll stay there motionless. Even if a wind comes up, it flies into the wind to hold position.
Mm-hmm.
It remembers the GPS location where it took off from, so if suppose I lose contact with it, it comes back. I can connect my Wi-Fi. It's got a Wi-Fi range extender, and I can connect the Wi-Fi, my cell phone by Wi-Fi to the camera. And I can control the camera with my iPhone, and it'll take 14-megapixel pictures, 1080p video. It's just fun to play with. Now, and I have to report that I haven't been arrested yet, and I've tried my best to stay within guidelines.
We should post the aerial video that you shot over here.
Yeah,
while we still could before the bad apples wrecked it for us.
Yeah, it. In fact, I don't even. It could have even been illegal to fly it here when I did, I just didn't know. It's just
I
think it was
dumb
before
stuff
all
happened.
That. Now my drone will go up to 1,000 feet, 1,100 feet without any problem at all. So,
mm-hmm.
So
we stayed within the regulations.
Oh, we did. Of course,
You're a rule guy.
I'm a pretty much a regulation guy. Now here is the deal. Since I bought my drone for $1,200, prices have come tumbling down. You can now get a Phantom 2 Vision for $730 from Amazon. Same drone.
Same drone. Well, but Doc, see, you're a cutting edge guy, and you're also an R&D kind of guy. So
yeah.
You got to be out there.
I have.
And in the forefront.
I got to be out there forefront. So I wasted $500. But, of course, I've had the joy of it for like a year.
You have.
So what I've done, most of our pictures of our website, of our campuses that I took that are on the website were taken with the drone. Those are all drone pictures. So I really enjoy it. But, Feroz, if you get a drone, you know, prices are coming down. Prices are dropping fast. I think you should just get one and enjoy yourself.
Now, back to the guidelines up here. Don't fly an aircraft that weighs more than 55 pounds. Your thing barely weighs 5 pounds.
Yeah, it's
55 pounds.
It's really light. Now, you know, I was curious as to how much mine would carry. So
right.
So one
oh, good grief.
So one day I rigged up a little basket with 3 oranges and a banana.
Why was I going to say, see how many grapefruit you could carry
and
with
so,
it?
And so I was able to carry three oranges and a banana all around the neighborhood.
How much did roughly does that weigh? A couple, 3 pounds maybe, right?
These were like big oranges. I don't know, but it would just take off. And it, since its GPS said it was a little, I mean, it wasn't as whippy as it was without that weight, but. You know, I had no trouble carrying my three oranges and a banana.
How high could you get the thing?
I could get to the same height.
Well, you better hope the wind doesn't catch it and knock those apples onto somebody or oranges onto somebody's head.
Yeah, you see, what they're worried about is that then I would have some kind of remote control release and drop
Bombay
and,
doors.
And open up the Bombay doors and drop my load of oranges somewhere. You can see why, without projecting this too far, why Homeland Security is a little bit worried about drones flying around the...
So how did you figure out that four oranges and one banana would be too much? Did you try it and it wouldn't get off the ground, or did you not go?
I just went with three oranges and a banana. I think that's all I had in the refrigerator then. And then
How about a six-pack of beer?
I don't think it would... I don't think my drone would pick up a watermelon. Okay, I'm pretty much...
I think we need to try this and make a YouTube video. It would look like a blimp if you did.
That's right. So there's more Tech Talk research we're going to have to do with this, and I'll... For us, listen, I'll report back to you at subsequent shows on what we're going to do here.
This sounds like a field trip. We need to go see and figure out things that the drone can pick up. Small anvil, maybe?
That's right. That would be good. We got an email from Frederick in Alexandria. Dear Doc and Jim, I'm trying to get a job in IT, and I keep shipping out my resume to companies, and I'm getting nowhere fast. I got a Bachelor of Science in Computer Science. I got a good GPA. I don't have any experience, but all the jobs want some kind of experience. You know, how can you get a job without experience? You can't get experience without it getting a job. It's like the chicken and the egg.
Mm-hmm.
Doc, I'm tired of living in my parents' basement. What are my options? I love the podcast Saturday morning at 9 a.m. It's just too early for me to listen to it on the air live.
Getting up before 9 a.m. is crucial to getting out of your parents' basement. You've got to work on that part, too.
I know, that is the issue. Okay, here's the thing, Frederick. You need to complete some technology projects at home. Nobody ever said your experience had to be paid. So find something you're interested in. You could set up a web server yourself, an Apache web server. You can install VMware on your computer. Then you can install a virtual Linux machine with an Apache web service. You could create a database-driven website using PHP and MySQL. You could write an app for an iPhone or an Android using one of the development languages. I mean, there are a lot of free online courses to learn those languages. You could create an Oracle database using the student, and I should say free version of Oracle. They got crippled versions of Oracle. You can download them. You can get them for dirt cheap from Oracle because Oracle wants you to learn their development system. Now, do something. Other than just sit around, because I tell you, I look at a lot of tech resumes, and if somebody, all they do is just say they want a tech job, but they haven't done anything in technology, I'm going to say this person's got no curiosity, no drive to get something done. I'm just not going to hire them. I don't care what your GPA is. You've got to actually do something. And if your resume includes actual live projects that you've done, you're going to stand out. You'll be in the top 10%. Now, you also want to join users groups and go to meetings. So you pick a project you're going to work on. This is the deal. You're going to run into challenges. I mean, you're going to, I don't know which version to use of this or that. How can I download the latest MySQL? I can't get it linked to whatever the problems are. You go to a user group, and there are just dozens. In Washington, D.C., there are just dozens of user groups. You go to a user group, and you talk about your project. You'll get all these guys to help you. Now, what's going to happen, all of these guys at the user groups are potentially employers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you don't want to do is go around asking for a job or nobody's going to want to talk to you. You just want to show your enthusiasm and your joy of learning and then volunteer for stuff at the users group. And that kind of networking is actually going to get you a real job. What you also want to do is read the latest industry blogs. You know, they got, I call them industry rags, these magazines you can subscribe to, these free magazines, industry rags. You can look at their blog and sort of know what's going on in technology. So you kind of keep up with the latest scuttlebutt. So you got something to talk about. And then finally, if you want to understand how networking works and how you can get a job without a resume.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get a copy of What Color's Your Parachute and follow Dick Bold's networking advice. Now, Frederick, this was a great question. And the fact that you were even asking these questions means that you are on the way to solving your basement problem.
I think you should, you know, hire Frederick. You've got a campus in Alexandria. He lives in Alexandria. The reason he got out of bed before 9 o'clock.
Well, here's the deal. He's going to have to demonstrate something. That's what happens.
He's going to hang out.
Yeah.
He'll wait for you to show up.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We got an email from Took in Chantilly. Dear Tech Talk, I got a laptop last year. I use it to record songs. I've got a high-quality microphone for my audio input. Now, here's my problem. The virus protection that came with the laptop expired, and I don't want to spend any more money to renew it. You know, I'm on a budget. Now, the software that was installed on my machine originally really seems sluggish. It seemed to slow my machine down. I'd like something faster. What are my options for free antivirus and anti-malware software? Thanks, Took in Chantilly. Well, Took, the good news, you got many free options. Now, I went to PC Magazine's 2015 roundup of free antivirus software. These are your top three ranked. They had a list of 10. I want to give you just the top three in the PC Magazine ranking for 2015. Number one was Panda Free Antivirus 2015. Panda Free Antivirus 2015. Just Google it. You can download it. The next one is Bitdefender Antivirus Free Edition. Bitdefender Antivirus Free Edition. That would be the 2014 Free Edition. Then Malware Bytes, MalwareBytes. Malware Bytes. Now, I personally like Malware Bytes. I use it. Mm-hmm. I haven't used these other two that were rated slightly better than Malware Bytes. So, but this is the deal. I'd get something installed right away. I would not be surfing around to get something in. I'd get your machine protected right away. Just pick one of those three. You'll be fine. Now, you want to make certain to uninstall the old antivirus software. You don't want dueling antivirus software. That was a great question, Took, and I'm glad that you're doing it before your machine gets infected, because then it's just even a bigger problem.
Exactly.
We got an email from Lois in Kansas. Dear Tech Talk, I'm confused by the specifications given to me by my ISP. That'd be Internet Service Provider. You know, that's like Kansas speak. I want to figure out download and upload speeds of my connection, and they only give me something called bandwidth. What is it? Where's the band, and what's the width?
Mm-hmm.
That's really a good question, Lois. I love the podcast. She has to listen to the podcast there in Kansas. Well, bandwidth is sort of used to describe the rate that data can be transferred to your computer from the website, either upload or download speeds. The amount of bandwidth determines the efficiency and speed of your internet activity. Bandwidth is usually measured in bits per second, how many bits per second can be downloaded or uploaded. Now, this is where it comes from. The name comes from Fourier analysis. You see, all signals can be divided up into frequencies, and the more frequencies that you have available, the broader the band of frequencies you have available, the sharper the signal peaks can be. And so since you're sending bits, one bit at a time, you've got to get these various thin zeros and ones indicated, and you can make narrower and narrower signal voltage changes faster and faster as you get more and more frequencies. So it turns out through Fourier analysis, the more frequencies you have, the more accurately you can make a high-speed digital stream of bits. And so, therefore, your bandwidth, the width of the band or the number of frequencies is related mathematically to how fast you can push information through. I mean, another way of looking at it, let's look at bandwidth like the keyboard on a piano. You know, the keyboard, you go from one end to the other, you go from high note to low note. Now, we know that the more keys that you have available for music, the more complex the music can be, the more information it has. So if you can only use one key, it's not very much information.
No.
But if you've got, say, five keys, you could if you've got a whole keyboard, you can have more information. So the bandwidth could be viewed as the number of keys available for the musical piece, and the more keys you have available or the more bandwidth you have available, the more complexity in your signal, and the more information that you could pass. So bandwidth is really comes out of Fourier analysis, and people colloquially then use it as the bit rate, bits per second rate. And it's not really an accurate description, but it's fallen into popular use.
You know, something that's kind of related to that, I've had all kinds of trouble with Wi-Fi in my apartment, and I've talked to Comcast, and as you know, Doc, there's a number of channels that you can be assigned to in order to use the Wi-Fi, and there's some that are very popular that they assign a lot of people to, so they get really congested. So they've tried to move me around, and I tested the speed by which I'm downloading things using speedof.me. And that it's actually kind of astonishing how bad the Wi-Fi service I have in the building, and I don't know what to do about it. But
so
that's
you can. I mean, you've got you got 11 channels in your Wi-Fi, but it turns out the frequency width of each channel is so broad that there are only three non-overlapping channels: 1, 6, and 11.
Really?
Yeah. So
this I didn't know.
Because, you know, you just go 1, 6, or 11. Those are the only ones you have to worry about. So I would try 1, try 11, and try 6.
Well, you know what? You just saved me 45 minutes on the phone with Comcast.
Because
every time I, you know, they shift me here, there, everywhere. So I'll call them back and try 1, 6, and 11, see which one is best, and leave it there.
You try 1, 6, because the width covers the frequency width of each of those channels overlaps the adjacent two channels on either side.
So
you just have 1, 6, and 11 are the only non-overlapping channels that you would have. So that's what I choose one. And you can also you could also try to use some directionality. If none of those work, you could get a directional antenna, which would then be focused on your devices, but then it would exclude devices in other parts of the area.
This is something that you would then plug into your Wi-Fi tower then, right?
Yeah, you just change the antenna. You know, because the antenna just plugs into the top. So I could buy a patch antenna, which actually it's sort of like a it has an antenna bandwidth that's sort of like a flashlight, and you could sort of point that flashlight beam at your devices. Or if you get a taller dipole antenna, which is the long, you know, the long cylinder, the longer the cylinder, the more that makes a donut shape. But the longer the cylinder, the thinner the donut, and so that you could get a longer and longer dipole antenna, and then that would actually eliminate people on other floors of your complex.
The problem with this is the Comcast tower that I have seems to have the antenna for the Wi-Fi on the inside.
Oh.
It's one of these self-contained boxes.
Wow, there's no external antenna
mount.
It
doesn't look like it, no.
Wow. Here's what you could do.
This is what I like. He's a problem solver.
So if you can't really get at that, what you could do is you could go down and buy another router for for $80, plug that router into the Ethernet of the back of your Comcast unit, turn off the Wi-Fi in your Comcast unit, and then use the Wi-Fi on this additional router. So you're cascading them together.
So theoretically, I could also save some money here by getting rid of the Wi-Fi on my Comcast account.
But
did I just say that out loud?
No, but they charge you for the router. They don't charge you for the Wi-Fi.
Yeah,
they charge
you
for the router. Then what you could do, if you really had this problem, I would get a 5.8 gigahertz router. See, everything else is at 2.4 gigahertz. Hardly anybody has 5.8 gigahertz.
We tried that.
So did you try it and it didn't work?
Nope.
Were there people at 5.8 gigahertz too?
Ah. The new router is 5.8, and they sent me a new one.
The new one is 5.8.
Yep.
Wow, so you just are really...
It's just, you know what, it's an old building, there's no metal in it, so there's really no shielding from anybody else.
Now, how close is your computer to the router?
My computer is probably 25 feet, because what I did actually, because the Wi-Fi is so bad, I ran Cat5 cable from the computer to
That's your other option, run a Cat5 cable.
But see, I need it for other stuff, like for my iPad and my iPhone, which I can't plug in directly to the router.
Yeah.
I need to be able to have, because I use a lot of streaming data.
Yeah.
Now those devices.
Now here's the other thing you could do.
Okay.
They actually make, because this Wi-Fi signal penetration is a problem. They make wallpaper that actually blocks Wi-Fi signals.
Like so lead wallpaper. There
so
we go.
You could basically put...
I wonder if they come in designer colors so like this, we've seen on the wall out here in the hallway.
So you'd set this up like you're an NSA operative, and you could put this special wallpaper all around your apartment and the ceiling and everything.
It would be my above ground bunker complex.
And you can also put this on your windows. So there's I'm thinking a directional antenna is going to be your best bet.
If you get
a high bandwidth directional antenna. Now, that means that it's you're going to have to
get a different router. You have to get a router to plug into the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, and you got a high bandwidth like my I've got a whole boatload of antennas. So I plug antennas into my router, and I got this one high gain antenna.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really another topic. I can put on my high gain antenna just sitting in my sunroom, and I can pick up probably 35 Wi-Fi networks in my neighborhood. Because it is high gain, and it just picks them all up.
Mm-hmm. And you can tell who's encrypted and who's not.
I can tell everything. So then I go on. If I got any neighbors that don't have it set up right, I go tell them.
Well,
it's like a community service.
You're here to help, but when I fire up the iPad or the iPhone, and it automatically obviously votes to my home Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
But I see. Honestly, 36 at least other Wi-Fi systems on that. Luckily for these folks, they're all locked down, but it's picking up a lot of information.
Well, I'll do some research on this wallpaper, Jim.
I like this idea. Blackout curtains.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
Lead-lined door.
That's right. Okay, listen, we love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu.
And that would be my cue to tell you that it's Saturday morning and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, online at federalnewsradio.com. Stand by. More coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk, and it is time now for...
Pros in IT.
And today we're going to talk about Raymond Samuel Tomlinson.
Who?
Raymond Samuel Tomlinson. He was born in Amsterdam, New York in 1941, and he invented email in 1971 at age 30.
So he's the guy we have to blame.
He's the guy who invented email, and I'll tell you how it happened. Now he says he has his own website, www.raytomlinson.org, and he's got some games on there that are kind of fun to play, and he also gives a background on the invention of email. He received his Bachelor of Science degree from Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in 1963 and a Master's degree from MIT in 1965, where he developed an analog digital hybrid speech synthesizer. He wrote his first computer program in 1960 as an intern for IBM. Then he joined the technology company Bolt, Baranek, and Newman, BBN. Now, if you remember, BBN was one of the companies that was involved in the development of the ARPANET In fact, Bob Kahn, one of the fathers of the Internet, worked at BBN before he went down to work at ARPA. During the summer and autumn of 1971, Ray was part of a small group of program who were developing a time-sharing system called 10X, and that ran on the digital PDP-10 computer. Now, that particular computer also served as a node on the newly formed Internet, and there probably, at that point, were probably only 10 nodes or 10 computers on the Internet. It was the ARPANET. The Internet didn't exist then. He'd earlier worked on a network control protocol for 10X, and he developed in particular an experimental file transfer program called CPYNet, and it basically means CopyNet. CPYNet. You'd copy a file over the network from one computer to another, that was the core of the invention. He then worked on another program called SendMessage, which would allow you on one computer to send a message. Like you were on a multi-user system, you'd send a message to other users on that particular computer. And there was a messaging program called SendMessage where you could message people on the one computer. No one had ever sent a message to someone on another computer.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody said, well, why don't you modify CopyNet, CPYNet, and include send message, so you could copy a file from this computer to another computer. And he said, well, I could probably do that. And he then modified send message to include the CopyNet code, and it allowed him then to copy a file to another computer. The beauty of this then, see, all email is, you're just appending a file. When you send an email message, you're basically, your email is just contained, all your messages are in a file, and another message comes in, you just append the file. So all he did, he wrote a program that would append a file at a remote computer. And, of course, when you append the file, you're not allowed to read it or edit it because you'd be looking at somebody else's email. So that file that you're appending is actually the inbox.
Mm-hmm.
So he wrote that particular program by combining send message and CopyNet. Now, he had to find a way to distinguish the fact that this user is on another computer, because usually you just put down the user's name, like R. Schertz, on the local computer. But what happens if R. Schertz is at a computer over at Stanford University? So you'd have to say R. Schertz at Stanford University.
But you're R. Schertz at Stratford University, aren't you?
I am R. Schertz at Stratford University.
So why would you be at Stanford?
Well,
I'm just being funny.
Okay. Well, the reason was, I was trying to be historically correct, because Stanford was actually on the ARPANET.
Sorry to interrupt.
I am so smart.
Stratford wasn't on the ARPANET. We'd love that to be, but wasn't on the ARPANET then. And so then he came up with the ampersand sign, so it would be R. Schertz at Stratford.edu, the ampersand sign. And actually, he had to get a sign that was already on the keyboard, and it turned out the ampersand sign wasn't the keyboard. And it was used for things like to indicate unit price before, and like you'd have 10 items at $1.95 each. And so the ampersand had been used commonly for at a certain price, and so that he adopted that symbol then. He sent his first message to himself. He had two computers side by side, and he just typed some random keystrokes into the thing, and he sent it from one computer to another, and he did it through the ARPANET, and that was the first message. The second message that went out, once he was sure that it was working, were to everybody in the group, and he announced the fact that he now had this messaging service that could go between computers. See, back then there were messages. You were messaging. They didn't really have the idea of email.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent out an email or a message to everybody he worked with explaining how to send messages over the network. So the first real use of email was to explain email's own existence.
I am too smart. I am too smart.
So
S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
Now, you may want to know, how much did Raymond Samuel Tomlinson make out of his invention of email?
I know what the answer is. $0.
$0, that's right.
And 0 cents.
$0, 0 cents. And really, hardly anybody even knows who he is.
So that would be, in his example, one internet at 0.00.
That's
yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That would be exactly right. Now, what is his pet peeve? His pet peeve was, in the beginning, people called it e-mail for mm-hmm. email. But he said, you know, now everybody knows email so well
that the hyphen should be dumped.
You should just dump the hyphen.
So it should be email without a hyphen. And, in fact, you know, my spell check on Microsoft Word puts a darn hyphen in it. It wants, you know, and I don't like a hyphen in email.
No.
And if you do a Google search, 70% of the email references do not have a hyphen, so it's right on track. So,
Dr. Schertz, we have a quick question here in in the forum. Ken says that ampersand is the and sign. That's ampersand, and he doesn't know what the
at
thing
what
is
that
called?
The at sign.
It's ampersand.
It is ampersand.
This is this at sign. Isn't that the ampersand?
Well, now I'm not so sure. He's saying that ampersand is the answer.
They made Google for a reason. You guys keep talking.
Okay.
And I'll do some looking.
Cool.
Okay. Oh, the ampersand is the and sign.
That's right.
He's exactly right.
Yeah. That's right.
You know, that is why we have the form. The ampersand is the and sign.
I am smart.
I guess it's just the. I guess that just means.
I mean,
I don't know what that symbol is called.
Well,
actually,
I'm sure there's some specific word for it, but we just don't know what.
We
it
don't
is.
Know what it is. If you know, we'll believe what you have
know,
to tell
and,
us because we have no
and
clue.
You know,
so.
You know, the ampersand is the and sign, and I made a mistake.
Wait a minute.
That can't
is that
be.
Possible?
How can that be?
Oh, it's possible.
This is Tech Talk Radio, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.9 FM HD2. More right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. Nope, it's not Monty Hall. It's not Ed McMahon. It's not Dr. Richard Church. It's this guy right here.
And I would be that aforementioned guy right here. My name is Jim Ross. I'm the adjunct professor for chaos and messing things up here on Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio. We just finished talking about Raymond Samuel Tomlinson, the inventor of email here on Profiles in IT. And during that discussion, we mixed up the end sign and the at sign. We still don't know what the at sign is, but if you could tell us what the end sign is actually called, you'll be today's winner for the pop quiz. The prize for which is lunch for two at the Escoffier at Stratford University on the campus in Falls Church, at Cafe Karim in Woodbridge, or the as-of-yet-unnamed cafe at the Alexandria campus. But you need to get that answer to us now. If you're calling from west of Amsterdam, New York, it's 877-936-9333. If you're calling from east of the Galapagos Islands, it's 877-936-9333. Anywhere else, anybody else, can call us on the wild card line at 877-936-9333. Andrew Mitchell, our adjunct professor for prize distribution and crowd control, standing by for your calls. This is the pop quiz on Tech Talk Radio.
When I was looking up Linus Torvalds, I ran across this quote by Linus. He said, "I was a nerd. a geek from fairly early on. He said I didn't duct tape my glasses together, but I might as well have, because I had all the other traits. I was good at math, good at physics, and with no social graces whatsoever. And this was before being a nerd was considered a good thing. So I was kind of curious about the word nerd. Mm-hmm. I mean, N-E-R-D, I mean, I went to Wikipedia. It's a derogatory designation to refer to somebody who passionately pursues intellectual knowledge rather than engaging in social activities.
Kind of like that.
Yeah. And, well, Bill Gates is the richest nerd.
Mm-hmm. He sure is.
And you know, nerd was, in the beginning, it was sort of, you would deride somebody by calling the nerd, but then nerd became popular. In the New Yorker wrote, to many people, the rise of Bill Gates marks the revenge of the nerd. He's the richest nerd. Actually, Bill Gates represents the end of the word nerd as a bad thing as we know it.
Exactly.
And so Bill Gates, of course, when as I alluded to earlier, when he was interviewed by Playboy magazine in that 1994 Playboy, which I've got here on the screen right now, only the text.
Oh, good.
Only the text.
Great.
Only the text.
It doesn't involve a spread of him, does it?
No.
Oh, good.
No. And this is actually posted to a Virginia Tech website, so it's not.
Here is an ordinary square. Whoa! Slow down, egghead.
Well, variations of the name nerd. Nerd was actually at first appeared in a Dr. Seuss book, If I Run the Zoo.
Really?
It was published in 1950. And it was one of Dr. Seuss's many comical characters, and the book ends with something with a statement made by Gerald McGrew, and he claims that he would collect a Nurkle, a nerd, and a seersucker too for his imaginary zoo.
So that's where seersucker suits come from.
Yeah.
That's an actual animal.
Yeah, and that is the first reference to nerd in 1950, and it started being in the 50s and the 60s. It was used in a derogatory sense. There was another spelling of nerd called N-U-R-D, and that comes, if you take drunk and spell it backwards and make the K silent, you get nerd, N-U-R-D, and they did that at some of the Ivy League schools because they says nerds just don't know how to party. They get drunk backwards. But I think N-E-R-D is actually the preferred spelling.
Yeah.
Now, you'll be glad to know that in 2006, they started Nerd Pride Day on May 25th. We missed Nerd Pride Day.
We did.
It was last
month.
We
didn't even talk about it.
It was started in Spain. We completely overlooked it. Now, one of my favorite websites is slash.org, and that's news for nerds, stuff that matters. I love that website. I look at it every week. And so Charles J. Sykes, this is a famous quote about nerds. Be nice to nerds. Chances are you'll end up working for one.
That's
someday.
A good point.
So being a nerd now is hip, and it was made popular by our wealthiest nerd, Bill Gates. Now, the question is, are you a nerd? And there's a nerd test out there.
You can pretty well tell.
Yeah.
You don't need to take the test.
No, you can take this test, and you can go to nerdtests.com, nerdtest.com. You can take the test, and you can see how nerdy you are. Now, I brought in what I had when I was in college, my slide rule.
Is that a slide rule in your pocket,
God,
or are you just happy to see us?
This is my slide rule. And now, this was before calculators or cell phones. There's actually a belt loop on this thing, and you'd wear the slide rule around.
God. This thing is a foot long.
Exactly.
It looks like you've got a sword there.
I know. So whoever nerd has the longest slide
rule
has
on?
The most power.
Is that your phone doctor shirts?
Oh,
no, I think he's just happy to see
goodness,
us.
Oh, my goodness, that is my phone.
Yeah.
First, I thought it was my
phone. Oh, my God. That was my phone. I thought it was a sound effect.
No, that was the phone.
I thought it was a sound effect.
I sure hope it's important.
So, well, I just turned them off. And so I brought in I hadn't looked at my slide rule for years. This is a post slide. I love this slide rule. I carried it with me everywhere.
Yeah, I'll bet you did.
Yeah. I took the nerd test.
Did you? Now, how did you score?
I took the nerd test. I discovered on the nerd test I scored 78. 22% of the people are nerdier than me, and then 77% are not as nerdy as I am. I think it was my age that was running against it.
I got a 45.
You got a 45?
Lightly nerdy.
Yeah, okay.
Lightly nerdy.
Yeah. So
I think I'd be nerdy with a twist of lime, if that's okay.
Yeah. So I really love this slide rule. I spent many a time working with it, and then, of course, it was replaced with calculators. I used to have an old HP calculator. I loved what they call reverse Polish notation in the old HP calculators.
Well, you can take our nerd test. If you laugh like this, then you're a nerd.
Now let's go to Beach Gear for the Geek. Now, of course, you go to the beach. Every geek has got to have his laptop at the beach. So you're sitting out there on the beach with your laptop, and your battery runs out. So you've got to keep a way to keep your battery recharged. And what better way to do it than to have a solar-powered laptop?
But, of course.
So what I did a little research on it. It turns out that laptops, on average, were used between 30 and 70 watts of power when they're on. Of course, our geek is probably going to be at the upper end of that because they're going to be running their gaming.
Of course. Have
all of their graphics going there. And so I'm recommending that you get two 30-watt solar panels. You need a voltage regulator. You could also get a reserve battery, which is optional. And you can get that whole kit, a laptop solar-powered system, for only $800.
Oh, just $800.
But you can sit there out in the sun, and you can have your laptop on the entire day, and you will never have a problem. Now, you do need internet access, though. And internet access from the beach is a problem.
Yes, it is.
So you need to have a high-gain Wi-Fi antenna that you can point back at all the condos along there, and there's always some weenie who forgets to secure his wireless.
Now, this would be the antenna that you brought in last
that's
week.
Right. That would be the cantenna. That's, mm-hmm. That's basically like a tin can with a feed at the quarter-wave point, and it's like a flashlight beam. It's got about a 30-degree beam. You point that back at all the condos till you find a wireless access point that isn't secured, or you could point it back at your own, which is, of course, the only thing that I would do.
I would only be
looking at my own wireless.
Which would be located in the penthouse apartment at the very top.
That's right. And so you've got your Wi-Fi. Now, if you want to be the ultimate geek on the beach, you need the solar umbrella. Now, the sunbrella is actually a round disc solar panel that has a pole in it like an umbrella, and so you sit underneath the solar panel and use the solar panel as your umbrella. That's the sunbrella. Now, this solar panel is 6 feet in diameter, and it has an output of 282 watts.
I'm sure it folds for very smart and easy packing,
yeah,
too.
Now, here's with 282 watts, you could power your laptop. You could have a small refrigerator there to keep all of your, well, Gatorade.
I mean, right, of course.
The geek's not going to be drinking
beer. No, not going to be drinking beer.
So you could have all sorts of lighting, 282 watts, powered by your solar umbrella.
That's it for this week. We'll be back again at 9 o'clock next Saturday with a brand new Tech Talk Radio here on Federal News Radio. 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2 and 103.9 FM HD2. Check out our sponsors by going to stratford.edu. Learn everything you ever wanted to know about this show and send us emails by going to techtalkonline.com. We'll see you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFMHD2 Manassas, WTLPFMHD2 Braddock Heights Frederick, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Federal News Radio's DoD Wednesday. At 3, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. At 4, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a smart discussion on the issues and challenges of the defense community. Plus daily DoD updates, mornings and afternoons, Monday through Friday. DoD Wednesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, learn how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings.